News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning. Good to have you along. It has been quite a Thursday. Mobile Mornings with some weather on the way. Probably after nightfall tonight, we can expect at least rain and maybe more than that overnight. And then the weekend looks a whole lot better. Dan and Dalton and special guest in studio right now.
Yeah, and we'll get to our special guest, Johnny Hatch, here in a second. First, I want to say congratulations to CB Carl picking up a family four-pack for the Eco Wild Outdoor Expo that gets started tomorrow at noon. Runs all weekend long at the Mobile Convention Center. We'll be giving away another family four-pack today and one last family four-pack tomorrow to get you out there to the convention center. But Dan mentioned it, special guest this morning with the Mobile County Public School Board, Johnny Hatcher joins us. Good morning, Johnny.
Hey, Dalton. How are you?
We're doing great. So you've got this great story. You called me up yesterday and you said, hey, I want to let you know that this is happening next week. A very special graduation for a very special person in our community.
Yes, sir. It's George Hudson Place. He is a 98. Man, boy, I tell you that dyslexia.
That's a whole decade. 88 is already, but 98 is something else.
He's 98 years old. This gentleman, at the age of 16, he dropped out of high school. He lied about his age. Mm-hmm. He joined the military and fought for our country in World War II.
16.
At 16, and lived to tell about it.
Wow.
This kid is a genuine hero. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, this gentleman.
Gentleman.
He was a child when he went, come back a man, and served our community well. That's amazing. Great man.
So what was the path to now graduating so many decades later?
I'm glad you asked. I got a phone call from the mayor, Henry Barnes of Ballabatry. Henry Barnes told me this story, and he said, Johnny, I'd love to be able to go ahead and get him a diploma. And I said, you know, we can't do that. I said, that's just not going to happen. I says, I'm not going to take and give this gentleman a diploma and him not walk that stage. Mm-hmm. He says, you're kidding. I said, no, we're going to do this, buddy. This is big. This is huge. This gentleman is deserving of everything we do for him. Mm-hmm. I personally have never met a man like this in my life. And look, when Henry come to me with this, probably 2 weeks later, I get a phone call from my father-in-law, and he's kin to the Bosarges down there, which is the places are kin to the Bosarges. Mm-hmm. My father-in-law's mother was a Johnson, so he's got strong ties to the Bayou. Mm-hmm. He calls and he tells me about this gentleman, and I said, you know what? I said, I think we can do something with that.
That's amazing. I mean, not just a local hero, but an American hero. Mm-hmm. And you said he's been waiting 82 years for this day. So where's he graduating? When's that happening? Is that next week?
It's going to happen this coming up Tuesday
at
2 o'clock at the Mitchell Center at the Bryant High School graduation. And we're going to go ahead and let him go, and he's going to go first. Sheriff Paul Birch is going to be there to have a few words to say and give him some things. Jerry Carl cannot be there but wants to be there so bad it just breaks his heart. Jerry is you know, Jerry cares a lot about the veterans.
Yep.
And you know, he wanted to be there, couldn't be there, but he's going to put some things together. I'm pretty sure he's going to do a resolution. And we're also going to have something at a later date as well for him at the City Hall of Ballabatry. So this isn't going to end here.
I think, you know, the big announcement you give, please hold all your applause to the very – that's not going to apply here.
Oh, my God. No, this
no, this,
this
is,
gentleman
– everybody's on their feet after – if he's the first one that crosses the stage.
The tears are going to fall. Mm. And, I mean, I'm sure somebody else is going to cry, too. I hope it's just not me. but it's – you know, it's emotional. This gentleman has what he's done for this country at such a young age. Lord, I can't even get my son to take out the garbage.
Well, yeah, and, you know, that brings –
it's amazing how far we've slid.
And that brings up a lot of questions, and I don't want to go off base here, but you think about everything going on in the world today. I mean, can you imagine 16-year-olds dropping out to fight for the country these days? I mean, well, I guess we saw some try after 9/11, and maybe some were successful, where the youth were fired up for America. But I'm just in this current climate, I don't see very many George Hudson places out there.
No, and we need more. And I tell you, we've got a gentleman in the school system, Colonel Barrows. He's over the ROTC, and he's talking about retiring. God, I hope he doesn't.
Johnny,
what a great man.
We were down, so it was Veterans Day a couple of years ago, Dalton. Mm-hmm. If you remember, this ROTC in Mobile County is pretty strong.
It's a big deal.
It kind of counters what you think these kids would be, but you have large classes of young men
absolutely.
Who are in the ROTC program in Mobile at all of the schools.
Yes.
It's very impressive.
Dan, I'm going to tell you, I'm so impressed with this gentleman. He has got a passion for the military. Mm-hmm. Of course, he retired a colonel. He come into our school systems, he has taken it to the next level.
Yeah.
He's regarded as probably the best in the country.
Mm-hmm.
He is well known.
Well, when
in the Pentagon
know exactly who he is. Isn't that amazing?
They love him.
We love
him, and he loves these children.
Yeah, you could feel it.
Yes.
And when Dalton and I started looking at all the ROTC groupings from different high schools, right?
Yes.
They each represent their school. It was like, wow, mm-hmm. these kids take their time when there's a million other things that they could be doing, which are, well,
we don't want them doing.
No, and then you can see the discipline, and you can see that they chose to have the discipline put on them. They wanted that.
Right, and then you see it in the, the Army, Navy, Air Force. We see it, they go to those programs year in and year out. You look at who was confirmed by their local congressman or
yep.
whoever they got to send the letter in. And Mobile, you've got them at all of the major military
yep.
schools.
Yep.
Because, yeah, you're right, we are cranking them out there. But it's just something else, this graduation you're going to have next week. So George Hudson Place, 98 years old.
98.
2:00 Tuesday, Mitchell Center.
Yes,
be there. And that's going to be a awesome, awesome moment for sure.
Yes.
While we had you in, I wanted to talk about a couple schooling discussions,
sure.
maybe, since we have you in. One, and I saw Jason asking about this on the text line, and I'm not sure how much you know about this, but the Teachers' Bill of Rights, that's one of these mm-hmm. bills that passed this legislative session. I believe Governor Ivey has either just signed it or is soon to sign it, and it was unanimously approved in both chambers, so it was a popular bill. Now, according to AL.com, this Bill of Rights requires schools to take action against a student when the student disrupts class to the point that the teacher sends that child out of the classroom. And then once they send the disruptive kid out of class, the principal must give a written notification about what type of disciplinary action was taken. Now, interestingly, it was the Alabama Education Association mm-hmm. who pushed this. They said teachers across the state are hesitant to kick out disruptive students because very often principals or whoever doesn't do any discipline, according to the AEA. And they want to make it so that, and they said also schools are worried about having too many write-ups and making it look like a bad school. So beginning next school year, the behaviors specified in the law that students can be excluded from classrooms, engaging in disorderly conduct, behaving in a manner that obstructs teaching or learning of others, threatens, abuses, intimidates, or attempts to intimidate an employee or student, willfully disobeys or uses abusive or profane language. And if that happens to a student twice in one semester, then the parents have to have a parent-teacher or a student-parent conference. Your thoughts on this? This is, I know it just passed, and some of the information
it's
I gave you there.
Look, this is not going to serve me very well with the AEA, but that's a feel-good bill.
Hmm.
We already do that. The only thing we don't do is do the documentation and send it in. Other than that, we do that.
Do you think
we don't let these children? There's no teacher. I don't know what teacher says, well, I'm just going to let them stay in my classroom and keep disrupting it. I'm not going to keep pushing.
Do you think there are others?
Right.
There could be other school systems out there. This is a big state.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I don't know what school system would do that, but it doesn't make sense to me that there's a teacher that says, well, I'm not sending them to the office because I've already done it. It doesn't do any good. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to sit here and let them do what they want to do. That just don't make sense to me.
Okay.
So that's why I would lean on somebody has done this to get some legislation passed, pretty much a feel-good bill. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take some hits on that, and I'm okay with it because I didn't come in here to tell people what they want to hear. I just tell them what I feel and what I believe to be the truth.
And one thing, you know, we were kind of talking about is this more paperwork, right? I mean, and not that it's necessarily always a bad thing, but teachers are there to teach. They also said, where was it? I saw another part of this story where maybe – more paperwork on the way dealing with, you know, some federal laws dealing with public schools. Yeah. I'll have to try to find that. But, yeah, teachers are there to teach, and I don't know if this helps them or not, but it's interesting the AEA was the one pushing it.
They don't have the time. Nobody understands this, but when they have to sit down and do all these fill out all these forms and do all this documentation and all these things, it takes away from teaching our children. And, you know, you can't overregulate things, and I think that's where we're headed.
Hmm.
It's going to get so hard for a teacher to teach children, and that's why we're having a hard time getting teachers.
So
it's just tough.
So on the AEA side, and we'll leave this alone after this, but they're saying that the problems in the schools not being addressed is affecting the recruitment of teachers. What would you say to that?
Well, I would say, how about listening to old Johnny Hatcher? Bring back the paddle. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the law is clear. We can do it. Let's just do it. It's you know, oh, yeah, put your hands on my child. Well, guess what? Then your child don't need to come to our schools. If your child can't act accordingly and behave, they don't need to be there. And we do that now. Now, this is something we've changed in policy. What we are doing is before, we would go ahead and give them alternative school. We're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
The only ones we're going to do that with is one that the law requires to do it with, is special education.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to be bullied and pushed around anymore by these bad parents. And there's not that many. It's very few of them. But these children, like we're discussing now, that disrupt classrooms and such, you know, when we don't have to give them an education. You know, we don't owe them anything.
Yeah.
They have to come in there and do the right thing. And if they can't conform to our rules to be educated, they can't be there unless they're special education.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then we have to.
Mm-hmm.
So all these times we're sending them to alternative school, we're not doing that anymore. It's on the parent to get that child educated.
Got it.
Then.
Got it.
Now, there you go. You talk about it starts at home. They want to go ahead and tell us how, you know, we're going to handle their children. Guess what? You handle them. We're not going to do it. So there are things that we're doing, but I tell you one thing we're not doing. We're not having teachers. I've not heard one teacher in my district or any other district in Mobile County that said, we're tired of sending them to the office and we're just going to stop doing it. We're just going to let them disrupt the classroom. It's not happening.
Mm-hmm. And that's notable with Mobile County Public Schools being the largest school system in the state, right?
Yes.
So one more topic I want to get your take on while we have you in here. And I know you were talking about this not that long ago, but a new system, artificial intelligence, to detect guns on campus. And you seem to like this technology from Guardian School Security Systems. Tell us a little bit more about this, and is this something that might be implemented soon?
Well, I'll tell you something. We are actively pursuing not only this one, but other school securities. But I can tell you, this one stands out to me. This is a game changer. If we can stop the gun from making it in the school, and we can identify the person who has the gun, and we can approach them and disarm them without them even knowing we know they have a gun, that is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't beat that. And I'll tell you this, with the technology they have, we can detect vapes, and we can detect knives, guns, bullets.
Wow.
It goes down to anything. And I'll tell you this, pill bottles with pills, it can detect that. And it does it all through like a sonar. It sends out these pulses.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of reads it. And with artificial intelligence, it says, okay, based on all these properties, this is what it is. And that's how we do it.
Interesting.
Wow. Or that's how they do it. And that's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you do is you put it on the outside of your school perimeter, and it keeps it from coming in. Now, I don't know if anybody knows this or not, but the child that actually shot the other child at LaFleur,
mm-hmm.
that child didn't bring that gun to that school.
Really?
No, sir.
Hmm.
That child obtained that gun from another child at that school.
Wow. She felt threatened? Would that be her side of the story?
That would be her side, mm-hmm. that she felt threatened. And I don't want to get too much into that,
yep.
but I can just tell you, you know, it's sad when, you know, we should, you know, everybody's, oh, well, I do it for protection. No, you don't. Don't you bring a gun to our schools. If you get caught with a gun to our schools, you're not coming back to our schools. I'm telling you, we're going to crack down on that more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Even a pocket knife. Don't tell me you forgot it. You just don't forget a pocket knife in your pocket. That ain't how it works. You don't need to bring anything. We're going to secure these schools because if you have it, and let's just say you are, you know, somebody does bully you and you have that knife, you're going to be tempted to use it.
Sure.
And we don't want that at all. We want to go ahead and be able to handle these situations the proper way and teach these children how to do it without violence.
Johnny, real quick,
Tuesday the 14th of May.
2:00 in the afternoon at the Mitchell Center. Just behave, park, and go in and applaud. That's what I would say.
And do not bring a gun or a knife.
No. If you do, you might, George Hudson Place might take care of you. He knows what to do, right?
Definitely his grandson would. His grandson is Darryl Bosarge. He's an Alabama state trooper and a local track star here.
Wow.
He ran track out at USA.
Thanks a lot, Johnny, for coming in and sharing that news with us. We do appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
It is 8:22. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. I want to talk a little legislature here real quick. You got some?
Yeah, I just want to tell you who this segment was brought to you by.
Oh, sure.
Tobias and Comer Law.
Got it.
And I know they've been keeping an eye on this legislature, this legislative session, as they do every year, because, you know, when things change in Montgomery,
sure,
they change statewide. It's an important thing for attorneys to be on top of. Actually, I had a great conversation with Desi about that one of these last times he came in, because they just, man, they're studying all the time, and that's why they're great at their job. Tobias and Comer Law, a local personal injury law firm. It's been helping tons of folks in our area get fair compensation for decades from their office down on Dauphin Street. And it was great having Desi in earlier this week to talk about National Boating Safety Week, which is on the way later this month. And, of course, makes sense when they would be having National Safety Boating Week as more and more people getting out there on the water. And they've got a great video series that they'll be posting at their website, TobiasComerLaw.com, as they went out on the water with Aaliyah Marine Patrol and showed you how to be prepared to just be safe out there on the water, but also if Aaliyah comes up to you while you're on the water, what you need to have with you and what you need to be able to let them know. All kinds of great stuff over at TobiasComerLaw.com. And don't forget to vote for him in the Nappies, votenappies.com, for best personal injury attorney. Brian Comer up for that, and for best personal injury law firm, Tobias and Comer Law. You can call for a free consultation at any time, 251-432-5001, TobiasComerLaw.com.
Governor Kay Ivey signed Senate Bill 270 yesterday, promoting government transparency and accountability. The bill, sponsored by Senator Arthur Orr, among others, is said to be the most significant amendment to Alabama's public records law in over 50 years. Okay. Hmm. At the same time, legislation to reverse Alabama's ethics law didn't make it.
Didn't, no. That ended up being a major, major discussion point this year.
Big time. And so the transparency law gets passed.
Yeah.
The guy's messing around on the ethics commission that no one ever seemed to get dragged into anywhere for whatever they're doing up there, including $120,000 to the top guy's kids for their education.
Mm-hmm.
And that just gets buried over to the left where the X is on the lawn.
Yeah, and I'll let everyone out there make their own decision or who they back in that fight. But if you remember the back and forth between Representative Simpson, it was his bill.
Yep.
And the ethics commissioner that was on, I know who I was backing after listening to them, but Attorney General Steve Marshall getting involved against the ethics bill, that seemed to have been enough to kind of kill this thing where it stood.
Yeah, and we asked Jeff yesterday, is it because Marshall's office or Marshall the man himself? Mm-hmm. And Jeff said maybe a little bit of both. I mean, if you live in the state of Alabama, maybe you want to watch yourself around the top prosecutor in the state. Is that fair?
I think that's a fair thing to say. And then also, with this gambling bill, it's still out there. And today, the last day of the legislative session, it really doesn't look like the Senate will budge one way or the other.
No.
One vote short of getting that through committee or to the actual vote on the floor of the Senate, and they just don't have it. So today appears to be the final day. By the way, Sean Sullivan will have Matt Simpson on his show tomorrow, so we'll get the lowdown on the ethics bill from the man himself.
Sure, he's got a lot to say. So does Rob Holbert from Lagniappe Mobile. He's on the way next on FM Talk 106.5 with Dan and Dalton. From Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It's 8:34. Could have you longer this Thursday. We got the story here about city council having discussions about where the police, police chief,
the next police chief,
should reside. Prine lives in Saraland. And so I think it's something that is suggested to those who are the people like the top cop or the fire department chief that maybe within 12 months, if you become that, you will find your way to a residence in Mobile. I think that's was the preference of the mayor. City spokesman Jason Johnson said Mayor Stimson's office believed that Prine would move into the city when he was selected as the chief. However, it never happened. The general understanding is that they are to make a good faith effort to move within a year on Prine's side. He said he just didn't find a good fit for himself and his family within the city limits of Mobile. So anyway, that's a conversation going on with city council about where you should live if you're in a top position, fire or public safety and policing in the city of Mobile.
Yeah, and you know, that's a big talker whenever you're talking about elected officials like the mayor. You want the mayor to live in your town. City council, you'd like for them. I don't know how much of that is by law that they have to live in the city. But for the police chief, you know, who is appointed, it's not the same rules. And as this back and forth continues between the mayor's administration and the police chief, former police chief, now Prine, and things have kind of slowed down over the last week. But in that Lanyap story, Jason Johnson, who's a spokesman with the city, he basically told Lanyap that he was told that the mayor and the mayor's administration thought that Prine would move to Mobile. Like, that was kind of what they assumed
implied,
would happen.
Yeah.
And it just didn't. So I know we got some texts on this, and it's actually our FM Talk 106.5 poll question this morning, brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Should the Mobile police chief be required to live within the city limits of Mobile? A simple yes or no answer there. And, you know, if you don't live in Mobile, just substitute the name of your city there and answer accordingly. Some texts we got here. Texter says it's much too dangerous for the chief to live in Mobile. They know that. Let's see here. Bunch of texts. Get through some of these Hatcher texts, which we'll get to a little bit later. I know someone said also the interim police chief doesn't currently live in Mobile either. William Randy Jackson.
That was a text we got, so we can't confirm that. But yeah, that he also lives in Saraland, is what it says.
Bonesaw, who always is full of great suggestions, said, "I think our police chief should live under the overpass with the homeless for the first week of their term." I guess that would be a good introduction to the role of police chief.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, a little undercover work. Right,
a little undercover work in week one. Texter here says he's not voted in, so no, he doesn't have to live in city limits.
Yeah, I mean, not only do city officials, city councilors, for instance, they've got to not just live in the city, they've got to live in their own district that they're representing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some conversation I've heard out there. Do all councilors live in their districts? You would assume so. Okay. Yeah, you would assume so.
Yeah. And we had the conversation for that District 2 race, too, with Anthony Daniels, who lives in Huntsville. He said he grew up in the district, but it's a big question, and people just seem to kind of be split on it. Like, half the people say it doesn't really matter as long as they rule well wherever they are. And then the other half are like, yeah, you should be living in the place you're representing. I tend to fall in that camp.
I do too.
If you're going to represent Mobile as an official, then you should probably live in Mobile. But, but
if
also,
you're representing District 3, you should live in District 3. There's no question about that.
Yeah, you would think so, but you can also kind of understand the plight of someone who has a house somewhere. Maybe they've lived for a long time in a place they've wanted to live, and then they get this position. Well, should I sell the house? Should I just get an apartment, kind of like a congressman do when they go to D.C.?
They're not getting yanked into the position. They're running for it. So they're running for district whatever. You don't live in district whatever. Mm-hmm. That could be a problem. You can solve that by what are your political ambitions as opposed to how comfortable you are living wherever you are. That's all. You know, if you're going to run for city council, district 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, you've got to make that I would think you'd have to make that decision to live in that district before you even begin to campaign to raise money.
Well, we'll check out the results of that poll throughout the morning on our website, fmtalk1065.com. While we were talking about some of the legislation that has passed this session as they plan to wrap things up, I think as soon as today, this is a big one that I was very interested in. I know many of you were as well. But we heard Representative Chip Brown talk about this quite a bit with Sean Sullivan. House Bill 66, That will hold seafood companies accountable by requiring the proper labeling of where their products come from. And it passed the Alabama Senate yesterday, and Representative Brown's bill now heads to Governor Ivey's desk, where she is expected to sign that into law. And as Lanyap notes, Brady Petrie on this story, and we've talked about this as well, the seafood industry on the Gulf Coast here has been suffering financially, and that's because a lot of foreign companies who have their own fishing going on are sending over and importing seafood into the United States that is not the same quality, but more importantly for us down here, it's devastating financially to our own fishermen.
They're being priced out.
Or shrimpers, especially.
Being priced out.
And so obviously, Representative Brown, who represents Hollinger's Island, he took notice of this. And so Lanyap says numerous shrimpers and fishermen have either been put out of business or have had their way of life go belly up. Alabama Commercial Fishermen Association Secretary Carrie Mitchell said support from community members and local entities like the Mobile Baykeeper are a large part of why the bill gained so much traction. Lanyap says the shrimping crisis reached a breaking point last summer when the city of Bayou La Batterie issued a disaster declaration. You may remember that, when Mayor Barnes claimed if action was not taken soon, Bayou La Batterie was at risk of becoming a ghost town. So now, I don't know how soon, but when the bill passes and whatever steps need to go into place, when you go shopping, whether you're Greer's, Publix, Piggly Wiggly, Walmart, you'll see on the actual packaging itself whether the seafood is from here or from some other country.
Can I go a step further and say what the label should look like?
Please.
So if it's not local, it should be, it should almost be like like an alert, and then you can make the decision what you want to put in your basket. Is it something that's not from around here? Make it obvious, I guess what I'm saying. If you put it in fine print, what does that do? If you make it obvious, like this seafood is from wherever, China, Korea, wherever, all over the place.
Right.
South America. First of all, I think we'd all agree that you're probably going to taste the difference. Second of all, look, then you can make the decision. You can look at the price difference and make your decision based on two things. The local seafood as opposed to something from far away, and then what the price difference is.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, depending on what that price difference is, I feel like I would generally go with the local seafood. But if you're having a big party, you're having a lot of...
Or a big family.
Yeah. And then you'd have to maybe consider the other option. But I would like that label... those labels to be on there, but I want them to be not fine print, but as obvious as can be.
Now, a texter here says, will that label be at restaurants as well? Also, the label should be a dookie shrimp if it's from Vietnam. I don't know what restaurants, because we've talked about that also. You go down to the Causeway, grab something to eat, you assume you're eating local seafood.
Something from right where you're at.
It's not always the case.
Right.
Speaking of that, I'll go off the beaten path here for a minute, because I know we have such a smart listening audience.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw that story yesterday about RFK Jr. And the brain worm he apparently had at one point, he said he was traveling overseas and ate some kind of pork, I think is what it was, and that he got this brain worm that ate a small part of his brain. And at that point of his life, and it was a while back during his second divorce, I don't know how many divorces RFK has been through now, but he was going through, I guess he said, a tough time. And this was all part of that divorce settlement. So he was trying to show that he's not making as much money. You know that game.
Yeah.
And part of it he blamed was the brain worm. Well, I kept reading. And he said, at that time in my life, I was eating a lot of tuna sandwiches. And he thinks his mercury levels in his body were 10 times what they should be. And that obviously causes some major issues. Well, I just recently got addicted to tuna sandwiches, and I was not thinking at all about the mercury levels. And I know my family hates it because, I mean, they walk in and it smells like tuna.
Yeah,
you got a mix of tuna and Greek yogurt and stuff like that. So I've been absolutely housing some tuna over the last, 3 months. And then I read this about RFK Jr. and the hole in his brain and the mercury issues he was having. So,
well, here, if you say you're eating the tuna, and you already know of the potential threat.
Well, yes.
Okay. That's you.
I did not. I mean, I knew something about mercury, but I was like, hey, that's
you now.
I can't possibly eat enough. Yeah, now I know.
That's you now.
Yeah.
It would say a lot of how intelligent you feel you are that you're like, I'm going for it. there could be a hole in my brain, but I think I can overcome that. I think I'm someone at the level of intelligence. You can put some holes in my brain. I'm still good to go.
Oh yeah.
So if you have love of tuna, this is a health thing, right? This is a health kick you're on, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm trying to get as much protein as possible.
Right. So you're here again is a decision for you. You're thinking, well, okay, Junior got that hole in his head. That didn't work out well, but I'm Dalton.
Yeah.
I have great faith. I graduated from various universities, and I have great faith in my level of intelligence. I'm going to eat to the hole is half the brain. I'm just going to keep on eating, and I think I can survive.
Yeah. Well, you know, I went to two universities, graduated from one.
Right.
So a bit of a difference
you
there.
You were assisted off campus at the other one.
But look at RFK now. I mean, he's intelligent. He's able to put sentences together.
No, yeah,
the vocal fry has nothing to do with the mercury. Maybe it does. I don't know. Maybe
I'll
be sounding like RFK if I keep eating these tuna sandwiches.
No, I think there's two separate matters right there.
The hole in the brain came from the worm that he got from eating pork overseas. He's just saying maybe the tuna mercury was a problem as well.
Leading into it.
My other go-to is shrimp, and it's probably those Vietnamese shrimp that one of our texters was talking about there. Does shrimp have mercury in it as well? I might be a thermometer before very long.
Well, yesterday or 2 days ago, we were talking about the arsenic level in Martinelli's apple juice.
Yeah.
And it was like, shouldn't level be zero of arsenic? But then Sean pointed out, no, man, apple seeds have arsenic in them, and so you have to regulate it so it's not too much.
Mm.
But arsenic is a natural part of... First of all, it's a natural part of many of the stories on Dateline, when Sally suddenly is not breathing.
Right.
But it's also, it's naturally the part of apple juice.
Mm-hmm.
I fed that to my kids for years, never thought.
Didn't know you were poisoning them. Yeah. So
had
if
no idea.
If you're unfortunately in a place that has lead in the water,
mm-hmm.
you're drinking Martinelli's,
yeah.
eating tuna sandwiches.
You're going down.
You're just loading yourself up with some metal. And
good luck at the airport.
Steve asks, Dalton, do you like sardines? Interestingly enough, I just came around on sardines too. The last 2 years, I've just been crushing sardines and tuna. And I think my dad's listening this morning. Growing up, you know, he would eat things and I'd be like, actually our whole family would be like, how are you eating that? What is that? And he held coleslaw over my head for years because I was just terrified of coleslaw, hated it, didn't like it. Onions, he would mess with me about everything I eat. Now, as a father myself, I'm at home eating sardines, tuna sandwiches, just the most, if you don't like that kind of stuff, the most grotesque stuff there is.
So. Sardines, my most vivid recollection of sardines were they somehow always ended up in cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
The can of sardines. Is that how they're packaged like that, with one after another?
Oh, yeah. You eat them out the can, man. I don't know if there's any other way to get sardines.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, they've got all kinds of great flavors now, too. It's basically like Lay's. Like, you know, Lay's comes out with a new flavor every other week.
Potato chips?
Yeah. The sardine game has hit a new high here recently with the jalapenos they'll throw in there. They've got some Mediterranean sardines with I'll throw a couple black olives in there. Oh, yeah. You should try it.
Do the old on-air taste test sometime here soon.
That might not go well.
I'll show my belief in you and my level of courage.
I'll start eating them in the morning during the show. How's that?
I'm all in. 849 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Good morning from Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106.5. At Mobile Mornings. What's the text line got to say? Are they on our conversation here?
A ton of conversations here. David, how about we do a speed run through here?
Please.
I'll tell you who's coming up on the Jeff Poor Show here in a minute.
All right.
David says, so you know what the lesson of Robert Kennedy's admission that he had a worm in his brain is? All three major candidates for president this year have mental disorders. I guess you have to be mentally ill to want to be president. And RFK said he's still smarter than both with the hole in his brain and that he wants to debate Trump right now. We'll see whether that happens. I don't think so. Daniel says Dalton will be a transformer before long. I could see that happening if I keep up my tuna eating habits. I don't know.
Well, hate to throw the word out there, but transgender. I mean, could it affect your body too?
Oh man, if high mercury levels leads to that, you just gotta stop me. You gotta say, put the tuna can down, man. You're changing. Gardner says, what years did he eat tuna? May not have been regulated. I think this was a while back, but the first thing I did was go to my tuna can pile that I have in the house.
Yeah, your wife wishes you had one tuna can. How many are in there?
No warning signs on the cans themselves about the mercury levels. Texter says, quality of tuna has gone through the floor. Even the albacore has gone down. And that's what I learned yesterday. Albacore, apparently, much more mercury than light tuna, and I'm swimming with albacore right now. Steve, do you like sardines? I sure do. Pat, as the school talk from earlier said, just going to Saraland schools versus any Mobile City school should have an everlasting effect on a child's life. Yeah, I mean, you see some school districts, most of them the newer ones, and they're just shooting off like a rocket. You know, Saraland, Gulf Shores, Orange Beach. Certainly that's a discussion, Pat. This texter, let's see, will that label be on? Okay, James says, in our conversation about whether you should have to live in the district, this started with the police chief talk, who is not an elected official, mm-hmm. but we turned it into also a discussion of elected officials and whether they should have to live in the area they represent. James says that should disqualify Tommy Tuberville. Mike says, and figures, lives where? He's worked in D.C. for how many years? Does he even have an Alabama driver's license? Just asking.
I guess the plan is for him to move back, right?
I'm sure, and maybe he said that, but that might be something that Dobson tries to capitalize on. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it will be, that he's kind of been a D.C. guy for some time. Texter, majors and council members have to live in their city/district by law. Okay, that was a question we were asking. Dell says, if FM Talk 106.5 was broadcast from another city, I likely wouldn't listen. And we have, you know, both sides of the bay covered. We've got hosts on both sides of the bay. So, you know, midday Mobile mornings, but we obviously cover things across the entire Mobile and Baldwin counties.
No, I think we do a good job. And I think we you know, we're in both areas often, just personally. So it's not a problem.
Well, between among the four of us here, that are on the air from 6 to 2. We've got pretty much from the Mississippi line all the way over into Baldwin County covered, yep. I would say. Let's see. Jason says, I like Mr. Hatcher, but he's misled about the discipline issues. Many of these principals cover up ongoing issues, so they don't give the appearance of not having control of their school.
Yeah, I think that's the whole point of what that law was you may feel embarrassed by what turns out to be the results of what we have found out if you document everything. But too bad. The teachers need some help. That's what now Johnny read it. He saw it another way completely, but that's good.
Yeah, he's saying you're just adding a lot more work on something that should be done anyway. Daniel asked, what was the name of that AI company, and is it publicly traded? Talking about the Guardian School Security Systems that we were discussing with Commissioner Hatcher about they're going to try to get these new AI gun, although it's not just guns that it detects, apparently a lot of other things.
Pills, knives.
Yeah, going to try to get that in by the next school year. And one more text we'll try to get to here. Matt says, Colonel Barrows was over South JROTC program back when I was in JROTC at Satsuma High School in the mid-90s. He's definitely going to be missed.
That's a legend right there. Coming up on the legend, Jeff Poor Show, we've got from Washington Examiner, Jim Antle. That's a good guess right there. He's way up at the Examiner. U.S. Representative Gary Palmer, and last but not least, ALCAP's Greg Davis, all part of the Jeff Poor Show, and all that is straight ahead.
Yeah, and Jeff will definitely be worth listening to the entire show as they start to wrap things up in Montgomery. 2024 legislative session coming to an end. Will there be any movement on gambling this last day? Is the ethics bill dead? Jeff will have some of that answered for you coming up. And will there be a special session for something? I don't know. We'll have to see.
We will know soon. Jeff's around the corner on FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton. And your Friday edition starts tomorrow beginning at 6 a.m.